relating to photography from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Now, here's Terry Tenseth with today's Artbeat.
On this episode of Artbeat, we visit with an individual who chooses to express herself through photography and illustration. This artist shares with us how teaching and environment have influenced her work.
One other thing that moving around makes me think of is I feel like there's this kind of moment, and it maybe lasts about a year. And it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. You don't know anyone. You don't really know what to do. You don't have a routine yet. That's like this bad time because it's really lonely, but it's also this really great time because you weirdly have all this time.
She'll also give us insight on lessons learned from mentors and will fill us in on her creative process. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to Artbeat. Good afternoon. We are visiting with an artist who is currently on display in the Paul Watkins Gallery here at Winona State University with an exhibit called Anthropocene. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kate Hawks. I live in Winona, but I teach in La Crosse, Wisconsin at UW La Crosse. I teach photography, and I'm also an artist, and I'm honored to show here at the Watkins Gallery.
Great. Now, you just said you teach photography and your artwork kind of revolves around your photography as well. In Anthropocene, I've noticed that it almost looks like macro photography of lots of different objects. Can you talk about the development phase and what your goal was for Anthropocene?
Yeah, I'll just start by commenting about the idea of like macro photography. I think that's really interesting that you saw that in it. And what it is it's photographs of many different things. Like it's a lot of candy and different trinkets and little plastic beads and stuff like that. And I photographed them in a lighting studio just on a white background. And then I layer everything together in Photoshop. And I really wanted the work to look like it could almost be read either as though you were looking through a microscope or as though you were looking through a telescope, like out at the night sky, right? Like that you're looking at celestial bodies or something like that. So that just that there would be this kind of play of space and depth and maybe some confusion of space and depth when you're looking at the work. But what inspired the work, and I should just talk about this term Anthropocene, that term refers to, it's a concept, it's an idea. And it refers to the current era in which humankind is actively altering the global ecosystem or like this earth that we live on. And so this work was really inspired by, I don't know, I suppose there's been sort of a rhetorical shift in the last couple of years. And maybe in the past when we've been talking about things like climate change, where we're sort of thinking of it as like this distant, far off theoretical future. And I feel like we're in the last couple of years beginning to really speak of it like it's happening right now, which it is. And so I just wanted to make work about kind of that realization and that kind of mix of emotions and that kind of feeling of being overwhelmed by this reality that our earth is actively being changed.
Do you always tend to have a social stance when you're creating your work?
You know, that's a really good question, because this is a bit of a shift for me. I wouldn't say that there's never been a social stance in the past, but my work in the past has been much more personally driven. And I think people, I mean, I hoped, I suppose, that people were able to relate to it on a personal level. I was making a lot of work about home and family and sort of nostalgia and thinking about childhood. So I hope people could kind of relate to it in their own personal life story. But there's been sort of a shift in my own studio practice in the last 2 years or so, where I've gone from looking to the past and memory and childhood and looking really inward to looking to the future and trying to look more outward and looking at some greater global picture as opposed to just inward into my own experience.
Now, every artist picks their medium for whatever reason. Why did you pick photography?
That's a good question, but a really hard one. I should start that by saying that I'm not necessarily locked into just working in photography. I do other things. In the show right now is actually a couple of drawing collage type pieces. But that's all to say that I am probably the most comfortable and fluent working with photography. And one thing that I really like about it, and I think sort of lends itself to what I've been trying to do in my work, is how, I suppose the word is, like, how trustful we are as humans of the photographic image. And I think that's because we see it in many other contexts. But one of the things I really like in the work is when the viewer is just sort of fully immersed in a piece and sort of forgets that they're looking at a representation of something, right? And I think that that's something that photography allows, because it's such a direct representation of reality. That's something that photography allows that maybe drawing or painting doesn't. Like, with a drawing or painting, we're maybe always aware that we're looking at an artwork. And with photography, there's maybe just an instant or just a quick moment where we're able to forget that and just kind of exist in the reality of the piece.
You make a really great point in saying that, because if I were to walk up to a photo of a person and be like, okay, this is a person, right?
Right.
But then I look at what you have going on in Anthropocene, and I really have to break it down that this is a photo, but what am I looking at and what does it mean?
Yeah. And that's something I was really trying to push with this work. Again, I mean, the scale is really large, right?
Right.
And so one reason for that is just because I want people to be able to kind of see all the little, like, details and, like, the imperfection and dust and residue on these objects. But another is just what you're saying. Like, I want people to be able to just kind of stand in front of this piece that's, like, all immersive, right? It's, like, as wide as their plane of vision, and just sort of enjoy existing in that somewhat strange sense of space or reality or existence. And just like I said, just forget for an instant that they're looking at an artwork or a representation of something.
And you mentioned you have some drawings as mm-hmm. well. How does your process differ between how you approach photography versus the hand drawing?
That's a really good question. I haven't really thought about it in that way. For me, I feel like it's very seamless. I tend to turn to drawing when there's something that I can't get a picture of, right?
So, okay, like, yeah.
Like, for a while, this is a few years ago, I was working on a piece about a burned house, and I clearly didn't want to, like, set a house on fire to get this
picture. Right. And you can't just wait for the right opportunity for when it happens and then ask those awkward questions. Can I take photos of your burned town house?
So I ended up having to resort to drawing. So I just started drawing this burned house. But the same kind of thing here. So the pictures, the drawings in the show Anthropocene are also of houses, actually. And I wanted them to look like these houses that might exist in the future when resources get scarce and we just kind of have to cobble together whatever found building materials we have. A house that looks like that probably exists somewhere in the world right now, but it's not immediately available to me, so I went to drawing for that. But another thing that you made me think of is when I'm making these big composited photographic works, there's a point in the process that really feels like drawing to me. So I photograph everything separately, and then I start in Photoshop with this very, like, blank canvas, this white page. And then I'm, like, bringing everything in, and I'm able to kind of freely move these components around. And that, to me, really feels like composing a drawing, like, with a pencil on a piece of paper. And so there's kind of an interesting link there in terms of process.
I can see how that would be. And plus, you still have your drawing tools, too, in Photoshop.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You've started out on the East Coast, went to the West Coast, ended up here in Minnesota, Wisconsin territory. Tell me a little bit about that path that art carved out for you, where you went to school, your training, and what you've learned from that.
So I grew up in New York State, and then I ended up going to Cornell for undergrad, and that was all great. You know, I felt very comfortable there. I had family support and everything. And I think my initial impulse to go to graduate school in New Mexico was really because I almost felt too comfortable in the Northeast, right? And I just, like, wanted to experience something totally different and just be in a totally different place and see how that kind of affected the work and who I was as an artist. And, you know, in retrospect, kind of looking back at it, it's funny because somebody else was just asking me about how place has influenced artwork. And I think it really does. And it does in a lot of ways. When I first moved to New Mexico, you know, that landscape is so different than what I was used to. It's so open. It really actually kind of freaked me out a little. And it was so foreign to me. It may as well have been like I was walking on the moon. But there's something about being so removed from what I knew and being in this kind of like wide open, like literally wide open. You can just see for miles and miles and miles in New Mexico, this wide open space that really felt like this interesting blank canvas, to make a dorky art reference, that really allowed me to kind of like reflect back on my life and, you know, my childhood and my upbringing in the Northeast and really see it from a whole other perspective. So I wasn't necessarily influenced by New Mexico in the sense that I was making artwork about New Mexico, but that kind of like open space there allowed me to reflect on my own experience in a new way. And then I think another thing your question makes me think of is just that everywhere I've been has really influenced my work for sure, and some in more subtle ways and some in more direct ways. Like I remember being in New Mexico, the climate there, the dryness.
The color palette's different.
The color palette, yeah. The dryness, the heat. I started making work about evaporation, ice melting, things like that. After my graduate degree, I did a Fulbright in the South Pacific, and that's like a really tropical, really hot, really humid. And I was making a lot of work about humidity and about density and about just feeling like overwhelmed by a climate. And then coming here, this hasn't really solidified into any concrete exhibition yet, but I've been working on a lot of pieces about just the winter, the coldness, how like frozen everything is. In a lot of ways, the Midwest really reminds me of upstate New York. So
yeah.
So it feels actually quite familiar to me, but the winters here are just like that much more intense. And it's the temperature degree that really drives it home, that really strikes me here.
It's funny because it will get cold in New York. It will get cold in upstate. But you guys get kind of hit with these nor'easters that are a little bit different.
Right. We definitely get snow. We definitely get cold weather. But it seems like we kind of are always going through these cycles in the winter where we get a lot of snow, it gets cold, and then it melts. And here, there's just more of this sense of hibernation where, like, it gets cold, maybe not so much this winter, but in the last couple of winters, right? It gets really cold, and it stays that way. Like, the snow stays on the ground for the whole winter. And that's just, like, a different type of persistence of winter than I'm used to.
Persistence is a good word.
yeah. Endurance, something like that. One other thing that moving around makes me think of is, I feel like there's this, and just its relationship to the studio practice is, I feel like there's this kind of moment, and it maybe lasts about a year when you move to a new place. And it's a good thing and it's a bad thing, but when you move to a new place, there's like this year where you don't know anyone and you don't really know what to do. You don't have a routine yet. You know, maybe you have a job, but you don't have like that other kind of social stuff figured out. And so that's like this kind of bad time because it's really lonely, but also this really great time because you weirdly have all this time. And I feel that I've been very productive in these kind of like bursts when I first move to a new place and not only have time, but I'm just like kind of experiencing it for the first time and maybe inspired in different ways.
Excited, terrifying, bored, yeah. Enthused.
Tension. Yeah, it's a good breeding ground.
It's a nice roller coaster to get you inspired to express those feelings when that happens. Yeah. So how do you keep it exciting after you've settled in somewhere?
Yeah,
how do you reinvent your art as a photographer or in drawing?
I think one thing, and maybe this is like advice for like younger artists out there, for me, and because I'm somebody who works really well with deadlines, just keeping an active exhibition schedule to always kind of have that next thing that you're working towards is really good. And that's worked really well for me. And the longer I've been doing this, the more I have kind of understood that we're talking about like a longer game. Like I'm trying to plan shows now for 2017, 2018, right? So just kind of always having that next thing on the horizon to keep you motivated or, you know, that you're working towards. And then another thing that I found really motivating is just being immersed in whatever university community I've been near, because there's always something going on, just the potential for cross-disciplinary thinking and events and stuff like that, like any given night of the week, somebody's giving a lecture on something, somebody's doing an event on something. And I should say that this idea of making this work and calling it Anthropocene, actually the initial impulse came to me when I was sitting in a lecture by, here's a little shout out.
Yeah.
By Jim Armstrong, who's from the English department, about maybe, I don't know, I want to say a year and a half ago. He was giving a lecture as part of the CLASP lecture series, and it was titled The Anthropocene. And I had loosely heard the term referenced, but had never sat through a lecture about it, went to it, was just like, oh, this is really interesting. And clearly there's this very extreme disconnect between how we think about our environment and our planet and what is actually happening now. So just going to that lecture and hearing Jim talk about it and him being passionate about it really kind of sparked the initial impulse to really do some research and start like thinking about what this would look like visually for me.
So it took you about a year or so then to execute the work, or?
Yeah, so that's a good question in terms of like how long these things take.
Because there's the initial mind development, I know, yeah. Which sometimes people take months to just kind of figure out, this is how I'm going to go about it.
Right.
You know?
Right, right. And of course, I'm an artist who also works full time as an educator. So there's kind of these like big gaps during the semester when I have no time to make artwork. So it's kind of like fitting all these things together. So I started thinking about this project during the last academic year, like probably in the fall of 2014. And then I actually like kind of made the work in, you know, I'd been thinking about it for about 6 months, like you're saying, and then kind of like made the work in a big burst over the summer of 2015. And again, knowing that I would be having this exhibition here at Winona State, so there was something to kind of like work towards, you know, had the whole summer to just kind of find objects and photograph them and kind of rework through things on Photoshop a few different times and make the prints. And then over the fall, had everything framed. And then, of course, the exhibition is up right now. So yeah.
There's a lot of meals that go into motion.
Yeah.
You know? I like what you say about deadline, because that's something else I've heard a lot of artists say is like, I like to work right before the deadline, or, you know, and everybody has their different level of comfort in how they execute that.
I think, obviously, I can't speak for every artist. People have their own way of working. But for me, it's like, I would probably always be making things, but the actual act of like finishing something, you know, polishing to the point that it's ready to go in the gallery, that's something I kind of put off. So like the framing, the making the final exhibition prints, that only really happens in my world when there's actually an exhibition on the docket.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, being an artist means being able to take in and experience life and then sometimes reflect that, which is what you're doing in Anthropocene. But as an educator, I'm sure you learn a lot from your interactions with students. What have been some of those things that you have learned or applied?
You know, that's such an interesting question, because I think that happens all the time, though I don't know that I've ever necessarily like put this into words, so this is going to come out kind of awkwardly. I don't know that it's necessarily a specific like process or technique, but every once in a while, like, you know, maybe a couple times a semester, somebody will bring something into a critique. And this is one of the things that I love about art, right? That we could have been doing it for years and years and years, and still once or twice a semester, somebody will bring something into critique. And it's just like, holy crap. I have just never seen that before. I've never seen anything like that before. It's completely a new visual experience, right? And so I think like in all these kind of subtle ways, somebody, it could be as simple as like putting fluorescent pink next to red, or the way somebody printed something, or just like a different contrasting combination in a collage, or, you know, and any number of things. But there's just kind of like these little discoveries that happen all the time, not only for me, but for other students in the room as everybody in the class is making artwork. So I think that's really one of the great things about an art class, is you just sort of give these prompts, really, which are the assignments, and people do what they will with them, and you can just never predict what's going to come back. And that form of discovery is just what's so great about an art class. I mean, all of those things, like, you know, things that I've seen a student do, or things that are in pop culture, like in a magazine or on a billboard, or, you know, the way this ice is melting on a sidewalk, like all of those things kind of get filtered in and, you know, stored somewhere subconsciously and then strangely come out in different ways. One of the things I've really enjoyed in the last couple of years, I know a lot of photographers hate Instagram, but I've really embraced it. And it's just kind of like been this thing that I do, like taking pictures on my phone and not really, you know, just kind of collecting images here and there and not really thinking about it. And then sometimes I'll be making, you know, a piece that is like my real artwork, right? And then a few months later, I'll be like looking back through my Instagram feed and I'm like, oh, that's totally that. It's just a different form of that. So it's like a weird kind of sketchbook, like collection of ideas kind of place.
Kind of like a Pinterest board.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throughout career, I'm sure you've had some learning moments. What have been some of the biggest learning moments for you?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, of course, there's been many, many learning moments, but just to draw them up on the spot, I think that I've had the really good fortune in my own education to have some really, really good mentors. And I think that I'm somebody who has always learned very well by example and not very well through words. So I'm thinking of a mentor of mine who was my thesis advisor in graduate school. Her name is Adrienne Salinger. She's also a photographer. And I feel like I learned so much from her just by like watching her own studio practice and her own passion for making artwork and talking about artwork, like talking about student work. I learned a lot from her about being a teacher as well, but just in terms of being an artist, how dedicated you need to be to the work. And I suppose in the last couple of years, I've begun to sort of not believe in any idea of talent, or especially like natural talent. I think it's all actually about work ethic, which is maybe just as hard to teach as talent. But I think work ethic is huge, and just dedication to that studio practice is huge for an artist. And I just think you need time to like work through things and realize that it's shit and throw it out and come back to it a year later. Like you just need that time for trial and error and to make mistakes and take risks and fail. I just think that that's something I learned over time by example.
Going from film to digital, I'm sure you had to.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's interesting because I always think that I'm somebody who's really lucky to be educated in the very narrow generation that I was educated in, because my entire undergraduate education was film and then my entire graduate education was digital. So I feel really lucky that I have both and like an immersion in both. At this point, I use predominantly digital photography because of that process that I talked about that, you know, I'm sort of like creating these drawings in right. Photoshop. I couldn't really do that with film. And there's just kind of like a freedom and a flexibility that I have with Photoshop that I don't have in the darkroom. One thing that I really, really miss in my current studio practice is that time working in the darkroom, because that's something that I really love and was just like a very big part of who I am and how my day was constructed, that there was these hours spent in the darkroom, which is like this really meditative and kind of contemplative time that is not really fully the same when you're just sitting at a computer, which I find I spend a lot of my time doing now. So there is kind of like a loss there for me in terms of the process. Like I miss the darkroom, but I don't think that I'm done with film or film photography or darkroom photography. I think every project demands a certain medium, you know, whether that be film or digital, or whether it be like sculpture or video or something else entirely. So I'm sure that there'll be some project in the future that brings me back around to the darkroom.
Do you still teach film photography?
Yes, I do. I actually am not teaching it this semester, but in the fall I'm teaching 2 darkroom classes, and I actually love teaching that class, and students really love it too. It's just so hands-on and so direct, and it's really fun. You know, you get dirty and all those
smelly, your hands get cracked. Sometimes you got to wear gloves.
Yeah, there's downsides too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like sitting in front of a computer the whole time. So.
It's for art.
Yeah, it's for art's sake. That's right.
If people want to find out more about your work, how to get in touch with you, give us your Instagram. Give your webpage.
Yeah, totally. So most of my artwork is on my website. The web address is actually my full name. It's KathleenHawkes.com. So KathleenHawkes.com. And then you can totally follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is HawkKate. So HawkKate.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Kathleen Hawkes for visiting with us on Art Beat. More information on Kathleen and her exhibit Anthropocene can be found at www.kathleenhawkes.com. I'm Terry Tunstead, thanking you for listening to Art Beat.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.